Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Very well, Andrew. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much. So kind of let's dive right in. Obviously, there have been some interesting, I guess, different cross currents where we had in Q4 quite strong growth, and what looked like was a disinflation process. And now, at least in Q1, and potentially moving to Q2, it looks like growth is slowing a little bit. But inflation is definitely stickier than maybe initially the market had anticipated. So, kind of, what are your big takeaways? I guess let's first dive into your thoughts on what transpired over the past week.
Well, I mean, I wrote about this slower disinflation process about a month and a half ago. This is called the last mile. This is what happened after the oil shocks of the 70s. You had 2 years of very fast decline, and then, things slowed essentially because the base effect was smaller. And also, typically, what happens is disinflation takes place first with goods. Services are slower. I mean, services are basically wages, and the labor market typically adjusts more slowly than wages. So that's why you have this slowdown in inflation. That is what the Fed expected. That is why the SCP, the December SCP, showed only 80 basis points decline in inflation in core PCE this year against 1.2 percentage points a year in 2022 and 2023. So the market is surprised, but for the Fed, this is more or less what they had expected.
Interesting, interesting. And then, well, we'll get into a second, which one of my questions will be, if they are expecting that, then what, why are they still expecting three cuts? Because it,
So the
yeah.
three cuts is basically because if you leave your policy rate unchanged from when inflation is 7% and you keep it where it is until inflation gets to 2%, then your real policy rate goes up a lot, and chances are you are going to do some damage to the economy and also financial markets. So the idea, the bottom line, is the Fed has a sort of implicit Taylor rule in their mind. But the idea was to, for policy, to follow disinflation, and there is a precedent for that. In the mid 1990s, the Fed let inflation core PCE go to 2%. Didn't cut. They even hiked, this was in 1997, they hiked in April 1997. And then in July 97, we had the Asian crisis. And the bottom line is core PCE went to 1% over the following year. And since then, we've had multiple speeches from Bernanke saying that low inflation is bad and the Fed thinks so. Remember the average inflation targeting regime. So they don't want a repeat of the mid 1990s where they were too tight for the disinflation that was going on. And that's why they had the three cuts.
Right. And then just, I guess, just what you heard and saw over the past week, has that reinforced your percentage expectation for three cuts, or the, at least the first cut in June?
So the first cut in June, I mean, if you look at the CPI, yes, it was higher than the market expected, but guess what? By 2 basis points. Okay, the unrounded number for the core PCI was 36 basis points. If it had been 2 basis points lower, it would have rounded down exactly to market expectations. Not, I mean, not to say that, inflation is falling like a stone, definitely not. There is stickiness, as you said. But if you look at housing, if you look at super core services, there is, there is progress. There is a definitely not a repeat of the bump we had in January. So in terms of June, yeah, I think, not there is not enough in the CPI, in the NFP, to get the Fed to change its broad narrative. Longer term, I have my doubts because episodes of disinflation with strong growth are very rare. This one has lasted for over a year. I don't think it's going to last forever. And to me, we are more likely to end up with a strong growth and higher inflation than disinflation and lower growth. Given the signs of overheating that we have in the economy, you look at corporate investment, it's the highest ever. It's also the highest in a percentage of GDP since the 1960s.
Isn't that
Household.
bizarre? Because shouldn't some of that be driven by leverage, by taking debt to do that? And if debt's so much, unless
It's
they're
not.
convinced that they could sit whatever their investment, it's going to re result in that much higher.
What's helping that is the administration dishing out subsidies to the tune of $100 billion a year, which is enormous. It's the GDP of a small country. I mean, just yesterday there were stories in the newspaper about Samsung Electronics getting $6 billion to build more chip factories. You just have to look at EVs to get a sense of how this will play out in the medium term. We'll have a glut of chips and other things. But meanwhile, it's really boosting investment, especially capacity investment. You have factories sprouting out everywhere, and that's pushing up GDP, that's adding to demand.
And the productivity is also, I guess in the US at least, it's pretty strong. What do you think? I don't know if we talked about it in the past. What do you think is driving that?
So that is a super interesting question. Definitely not AI, because we're still at the beginning. AI is going to have an enormous influence on our lives. But if you compare to the internet revolution, maybe we are in, I don't know, 1992, 1993, very early stages. We have to figure out what we're going to do with it, and we have to adapt it widely. So not AI, but during the pandemic, businesses learn to cope with labor shortages and really adverse business condition. So those that survived have become more efficient, and I suspect they have kept their efficient business practices, and that's probably why we are seeing this productivity increase. And so the question is whether it can be sustained. To be honest, I think a lot of that increase in productivity is businesses not hiring enough people. Like you go to the shop, you see an increasing number of goods that are behind lock and key, because it's too expensive to hire the personnel to make sure that shop lifters do not. So I think the jury is out, but definitely, if I'm wrong. And we are in an era of unending super productivity growth. Yeah, then we'll continue to have the strong growth with low inflation, with disinflation.
Okay, and then for our clients and thinking, what are the key things for the week ahead? Obviously, we'll talk about data, speeches, anything like that, but is there anything else that you're also looking at?
Well, I mean, so besides the Fed, it's a bit of a data light week. We have data on the residential market, which is actually quite important for inflation, because what you need is to have more of a supply of homes to have faster housing disinflation. In fact, it's in my CPI review. You can see a clear relationship between vacancy rates are going up, and housing inflation. So, for vacancy rates to go up, we need more existing and new homes to come on the market. And next week we have existing home sales and we have housing starts. So those are going to give us a sense of the recovery in supply and
Right.
so of the prospect for disinflation.
Does multifamily get included in either of those statistics? Because that I
Absolutely.
understand is like there's a lot of multifamily units.
So,
Yeah.
100%. There is a bit of a cycle in a multifamily because one reason, so there is a shortage of housing in the US. I have some charts, I think in my CPI review, you can see that after the GFC, there was a huge increase in the average age of a dwelling. So the data is there. There is a shortage. One of the reasons for the shortage is a very, very restrictive zoning laws. So you can't build homes. Americans prefer to have their own homes. But the problem is people who already have their own single family home don't want anyone to build around them. And so local governments, so also this is very difficult to change because it's decided by local government, towns, cities. And so what many have done is to relax the zoning laws for multifamily housing, but much less so for single family housing. So yeah, you've had a bit of an increase, actually a marked increase in multifamily houses, and that's why homes, and that's why the vacancy rate is going up, and that's where the disinflation is going to come from, the upper end of the apartment markets, very much so.
Interesting. Anything else for next week? And it like
I mean, you know, the Fed, they are also going to talk to us about QT. They want to taper. They disagree on how to go about it. So some people say there is no cause. Look at all the reserves we have. They've gone up by 300 billion since we started QT. Then you have the president of the Dallas Fed, Lori Logan, who used to run the Soma portfolio at the New York Fed, who says, not so fast. We can see a widening gap between private repo rate and other money market rate. This is evidence of segmentation. It's not efficient. We need to start tapering. So they have to agree on that. And then they agree more or less on what the long-term portfolio will look like. They are not going to buy MBS again, they tell us. The problem is they have quite a dollop on the balance sheet at the moment. And because interest rates are so high relative to where they were a few years ago, no one is refinancing. So the MBS have not maturing. If they want to get rid of them, they have to sell them. I don't think they have the appetite to do that because it would mean booking losses. It would probably send mortgage rate up, which in an election year is not a good thing. And in general, for the Fed, is not a good thing. You know, Powell was in Congress last week and he was lambasted for keeping
Right.
the
It's
price.
easier for them to sell treasuries or let treasuries go long. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not, as they are happy with the roll-offs of the treasuries, it's just that if they want to get rid of the MBS fast, they have to sell. If they sell, they will have to book losses because what's QE? It's a buy high, sell low bond investment scheme, basically.
Yeah.
So they have no appetite for the losses. And also there is the issue of what happens to mortgage rates if they sell, because mortgage rates have not come down by much, actually.
Okay, awesome.
A little bit about the politics, maybe, because there's
Sure,
nothing
sure.
interesting.
Yeah.
So I'll keep this brief. But you know, there is a Republican representative who has resigned. His name is Ken Buck, And so the result is that the Republicans now have only 218 seats out of 435. And there are other Republicans who are rumored to be considering resigning, many of them out of their unhappiness with former President Trump being the candidate this time around. So the bottom line is that the GOP majority in Congress looks a bit shaky. I mean, there will be special elections to fill those seats, but this will take time. And we're not going to see. So the result is we can forget about any significant legislation getting passed between now and the election, except for TikTok, of course. But TikTok is already behind us.
And what's your delta on something getting done there?
I think probably more than 50%.
Really? Oh,
Yeah.
I thought everyone's saying it's like very hard to get through the Senate and.
I'm not so sure, China bashing is definitely a bipartisan effort at the moment. And I think if it gets to Biden's desk, he will sign it.
Yeah, that I agree. Okay, cool. Just need to wrap up, but there were a few quick highlights from the past week. Focus on CMIA stuff for the CNB to retain a 50 basis point of easing with an FX trade there. China growth tracker. As we said, this was a new and improved with a lot more kind of real-time factors. Actually looking for March data to disappoint, which probably would be a surprise to the kind of building narrative. Maybe things are stabilizing there. A new box trade in UK, US twos, tens on the rate side. A few comments we're updating on the EMFX side. And then, yeah, generally, I mean, listen, it's been fairly tight markets in a lot of them. In a lot of macros, certainly in the FX, EM, and even on the rate side, the markets have been pretty tight and volatility beginning hit. But there's definitely some interesting things where we're looking for risks that are potentially building or opportunities. So a lot of interesting content this week. So for that, I'll say thank you very much and wish everyone well, this is on Friday afternoon, so a great weekend and a great week ahead.
Yeah, have a nice weekend, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.